Okay, now we can start. You know, it's only an AA meeting, you know. Nobody's going to die. We're not invading Normandy or anything like that. Hey, you know, I see a lot of familiar faces. This is great. You know, it's great. You know, I've been sober since... I'm an alcoholic. My name is Russell. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and I haven't had necessarily have a drink since January 25th, 1981, so I've been around here a while, and that's pretty, you know, it's pretty neat. I mean, I do meet a lot of new people. I love new people, but it seems everywhere I go, I travel around South Florida a lot and different places, I just see a lot of faces that I know. You know, it's good to, you know, be in a room like this and see a lot of familiar faces. I feel like I'm with a bunch of cousins and brothers and sisters. It's like I'm in, like, my living room, and we're all here just hanging out, you know, and it's great. So, you know, that's the deal. So, this is the middle of a step series. I'm also doing a step series up at the Little River Group on Thursdays, and so you guys are, like, one head or behind them, I'm sure. But if you're counting, this is step eight. I mean, I don't want you to, in any way assume that we're going to actually talk about step eight. I used to do that stuff when I had anxiety, but so I'm going to talk about whatever the Lord puts on my heart to talk about, and it probably won't be a bad deal. It'll work out. It often does. My sponsor, when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, he said, you know, because I had something called resentments, which apparently is the number one offender. I don't know whether it's number one or number six, whatever. It's not a good thing. And apparently he recognized what happens is when you've been around for a while. I mean, I know we have this saying in AA, the guy who's sober is the guy who got up earliest and everything. I don't know about that. I think perseverance through trials and tribulations while you're relying upon God breeds a certain maturity. But what do I know? But in any event, you know, one of the things is when you've been around for a while, what seems to happen is you get a little, what we call it, spiritual discernment. You know, the 11th step says that we develop inspirational thinking. It says what used to be, you know, the sort of like something weird or some sort of hunch or something like that. You know, it says where it's sort of weird and it's strange and sometimes leads us to do all sorts of crazy things. You know, this is part of knowing, you know, things that used to baffle us. All of a sudden we're like things that used to drive us crazy and confuse us. All of a sudden we're like getting them just like that without thought. You know, every once in a while when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, the way this happens to you early on is you might have a month or two. And, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you're a rageaholic, you're a feel-sorry-for-yourself-aholic, you're a say-why-they-treat-me-this-way-aholic, they don't know who they're dealing with, a holic, an if-butter, you're a yes-butter, you're if-only-a, you're saying, I can't believe this is happening to me, you know, they're not going to get away. You're every holic, you're a hypocrite-holic, you're every holic, you're a feel-sorry-for-yourself-aholic, you're a self-pity-aholic, you're every holic in the world, you got all that stuff going on. Because you're not drinking anymore, so now it's in full bloom, you know, you know, you say, you know, the good thing about staying sober for a while, because if you stay sober for a while, then you realize why you drank. But you got to be sober in order to realize why you drank, and then you realize what the disease is all about. You realize after a while, you come in here because you think you got a drinking problem, and then ultimately after about 6 months or so, you realize you got a thinking problem, you know, because you realize that the drinking is just a symptom of the thinking. Because anybody who would think the way you would be drinking, or else you'd be crazy. Because alcohol was the only thing that really worked for me, you know. No woman, no suit of clothes, no haircut, no vacation, no car, no anything like that. Although it worked to a certain extent, but none of it worked quite as well and quite as fast as just a few drinks. And so I drank it. And if alcohol did for you what it did for me, yeah, man, you'd drink it too. And, you know, yeah, of course, the bottom line is that it got to the point where I, whether you want to call it physically, mentally, whatever it is, addicted to this stuff where I couldn't stop drinking. And, you know, if you're in the, I don't know, if you're talking to a bunch of people that aren't alcoholic and you say I couldn't stop drinking, they won't understand what you're talking about. But, you know, if you don't understand what it's like to suffer from some seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, the thing that I've recovered from that. I'm not recovering from that. I've recovered from the seemingly hopeless state. The seemingly hopeless state of mind, the body, which they recovered from and which I recovered from and which everybody who comes in AA recovers from, is that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body where you can't stop drinking. And if you don't understand what that's all about, then all I can tell you is we suffer from different disease. Because I suffer from a disease where I'd say to myself, I'm not going to have a drink today, and I'd be drunk by the end of the day. And then I'd get up the next morning and I'd say, I'm definitely not going to buy booze today, and I was buying booze by the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I'd wake up and the next morning I'd say, well, I'm not going to go to the bar today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was going to the bar. And it happened over and over and over again. And what happens is you end up drinking against your will. Mm-hmm. You end up drinking against your will, and you do that for 6 months or 2 years or 3 years. And, you know, and after a while, you give up because you know you're 31 years old and your life is over and you're never going to be better again. And that's the end of your life. And you wish you were dead. And it's horrible being alive, but the only thing is you're scared of dying. So here you got to live this crummy way the way you're living because you're scared of dying and you can't stop drinking. And we get to the point where you can't stop drinking, and only alcoholics get to that point. It's actually a great thing. Because if you didn't get to that point, then you don't get to experience the resurrection power, the good stuff. You don't get to experience what you're experiencing now or what you have an option to experience right now, and that is to have an incredible life. You'll just be one of these guys that are, you know, out there. You know what they're doing out there. I mean, you know, there are people, you know, like the novelist says, out there, you watch them, you talk to them. I talk to them all the time. They're living lives of quiet desperation. They're home to work, home to work, home to work, and they're depressed, and they're going through everything we go through, maybe at a little bit of a different level. It just never gets that bad, so they really have to do something about it. They pop the pills, they go to the doctors, they're sucking their thumbs, they're doing all that stuff, you know. They're complaining, not all of them, but a lot of them, you know. They're running around looking for a new set of boobs or new clothes or new, you know, Viagra or whatever it is they can get their hand up on to make their life okay because it's crummy the way it is right now. And you see, my problem was I was a nothing. I was always going to be, and it didn't matter that I was a lawyer, I had a 3-piece suit, I had a nice car, I was a nothing. I knew I was a nothing. I knew I was always going to be a nothing. I was never going to be anything but a nothing. I was always insufficient. I was always not good enough. You know, I always had to work or put on the pretense to do whatever it is in order to belong. You know what I mean? And I was a nothing. I put a couple of, what happened to me is I found something that I could put in my body and it turned me into an almost, and when you're a nothing, almost is the top of the world. You know, I could become John Wayne just like that, a couple of pops, you know. And of course, the problem is alcohol doesn't work for me anymore, so I don't drink it. And of course, the real problem with me is alcohol stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me. And I hurt a lot of people. I hurt a lot of people because I didn't realize it stopped working for me. And the first step in getting out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. And, you know, I mean, it's just something about, and then I come in here thinking that my only problem is drinking. And so I got to stop drinking. So you go to Alcoholics Anonymous because you figure this is the place where you go to stop drinking because, well, you know, the name gives it away. Don't you think? I think the name gives it away. It doesn't say God Anonymous or Seek Ye First the Kingdom of God and all and His righteousness and all things will be added on to you. That's first things first. It doesn't say suit the relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. It doesn't say there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find Him now. It doesn't say you can't manage your own life, no human power can help you, only God could and would if it was sought. It doesn't say any of that stuff. It doesn't say burn the idea into the person's mind. It says the only thing that'll keep you sober is a relationship. It doesn't say that stuff. It says Alcoholics Anonymous. So when you have an alcohol problem, you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I picked up a white chip, you know, 32 years ago plus, and I haven't found enough to have a drink. And so I thought, you know, that's pretty much cured of the alcohol thing. And then I found out I had alcoholism, which is unfortunate because if you have an alcohol problem, by the way, if your only problem is alcohol, you don't even belong here. Really, you don't. You're just wasting your time. You're wasting your money. I'm going to solve your problem. If you have an alcohol problem, I'm going to solve your problem right now. Stop drinking. Yeah. No, really, if that's the problem, just stop drinking. But if you have the problem I got, you stop drinking and you still got that stuff going on in your brain because that's where it centers in your mind. You know what it says in the big book? Here's the great thing. I used to think a lot. Anybody here ever think a lot? Oh, man. Man, listen, I got some good news for you. I know you're not going to believe this. You can't believe how well you can get on in life without any thoughts whatsoever. You know what I mean? You don't have to think. You know when you have to go to the bathroom, right? And you know when you're hungry, right? And you know when you're tired, right? That's all you have to know. That's it. Everything else sort of fits in by itself, you know? Every other thought other than that is just bad stuff, you know what I mean? Just get rid of it. You know, 90% of my thoughts were about things and people and stuff that I had no business thinking about and, you know, and stuff that was never going to happen. It was none of my business. And the 10% of thoughts that had to do with me, I had no power over it anyway, you know? And the 1% of the thoughts that had some sort of, that I could actually do something about, I was thinking about them wrong. So, you know, that's why we got to get rid of all these old ideas. That only takes about, well, I've been working on it for 32 years. I've gotten rid of a lot of old ideas. I only have about 3,000 left to go. And unfortunately, 2,999 of those, I don't even know what they are. So, you know, because you got to discover them first and everything. And so, but it's a pretty good deal. So in any event, I came into here, you know, so I suffer from life. It says, so what happens is I started to, for whatever reason, and we're going to talk a little bit about the reasons and the deal. I started to be I told my sponsor, I said, I'm being brainwashed. You're brainwashing me. He says, well, maybe your brain needs washing. You know, that's an old days. But I got into the brainwash deal, and they turned me into one of these AA robots or whatever it is, and, you know, which I'm proud to say I'm one today, big book thumpers and everything like that. And reading the big book and the 12 and 12 and Dr. Bob and the good old timers and everything I can get my hand on and every old timer I can get my hand on so I could squeeze them like a lemon because I wanted what they had and I was willing to go to any length to get it. I was just, that's what I wanted. I wanted what they had. I didn't even know what they had, but I wanted what they had. What they had. Not what everybody has in here. I don't stay sober, nor do I want what's going on in here because I learned a long time ago this ain't Well People's Anonymous. And many are called, but few are chosen. You know what I mean? And I wanted certain people. I found my way. It says, if you want what we have, I found my way. And I continue to find my way, and I follow my way, and I wanted what they had. And God's been good to me. I got a lot of that stuff that I wanted. And I don't even know how I got it, so I'm just going to blame him. I'm going to give him all the credit. And what I found is, one of the things that happened is if I replaced all my thoughts and all my thinking, no matter how smart and how right I thought I was, and of course I'm an alcoholic, so I think I'm smart and I'm right, you know, I'm alky right. That means if you disagree with me, you have to die because you're just so flippin' stupid. You know what I mean? No matter how right I think I am, you know, you know, my sponsor once asked me when I was 3 years sober, he says, Russ, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And I said, both. Stupid question, you know. I had these sponsors, they'd always ask me stupid questions, you know. And I said both. And he said, wrong answer. I said, what do you mean wrong answer? He says, well, you know, Russ, he says, you know, you got to choose one or the other. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I choose right. Wouldn't you choose right? I choose right. He says, well, you know, that's too bad. He says, because when you're right, when you'd rather be right, then you're never going to be happy. You'll always have to get the last word. You'll get into a lot of arguments. You'll never stay married for a long period of time. You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, I've been married for 32 years, and I got 4 kids and 6 grandkids, and the only reason I've been married for 32 years is because, truth of the matter is, I've discovered that I'm always wrong. Plead guilty, you know? I pled guilty. I didn't even get into the fight. He says, you're probably the worst husband in the world. I said, you know, I think you're probably right about that. You never take out the garbage. Yeah, no, right again, you know what I mean? You know, it's always, the fine is always small, like a blouse or something. I can handle it, you know. I just plead guilty and go right to the sentencing, you know. And so it cuts down on the arguments, you know. I handle a lot of divorces, so I'd rather be happy than right, you know. And the guys that are right can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, for the rightness, you know, the rightness of it all. And he says, because you'll always have to get the last word in. You'll have resentments, you'll have problems and everything like that. And so after my sponsor told me that, because that's stupid, you know how it is when you're in AA, when you're an alcoholic, you're defiant. You know, that's one of the characteristics, one of our chief characteristics, we're defiant. Which means no matter what anybody says to us, true, false, or whatever, you know, if they say go right, I'm going left, I don't care. Because I'm not, you can't tell me what to do, you know. And so, about 3 or 4 years later, you know how it works in here, after being pounded, I decided one day, I suppose, that I'd rather be happy than right, and I didn't argue. I said, okay. Even though I was right, I said, fine, no problem. I didn't argue. You know, and everything worked out okay, you know. And so I discovered I'd rather be happy. I choose to be happy today. You know, happy works better for me. You know, I figure this isn't a dress rehearsal, right? You know, this is probably it, you know. So I don't want to get to the end of my life and say, man, I wish I had done that happy thing instead of the right thing, you know. Now I've blown it, you know. Now I've blown it. And the good thing about being happy, wanting to be happy, and are filled with joy, you know, is you don't have to drink. Because I've got some sort of problem with the world and with life, and I don't know what it is. You know, I mean, I used to tell my sponsor, I said, I'm sensitive. He says, no, Russ. He says, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy, you know, and it's, which is probably true. And believe me, he used to hurt my feelings a lot. I mean, this stuff, I was an abused guy. You know, I've told you guys some of the stories. You know, I used to pride myself in all my degrees, and I showed my sponsor all my degrees on my wall, and I have a wall of degrees and certificates, and he graduated like sixth grade, and that was it. I showed him all my degrees and certificates, and he says, well, very good. He says, these are my degrees. He says, well, very good, Russ. He says, you know, rectal thermometers have degrees, and you know what they do with those. You know? You can never have conversations with these guys, you know? Terrible, you know? It's terrible. So in any event, I don't know. When I was up in whatever insulation, the Lord gives men and women in order to withstand traffic in Dade County and the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real. I'm talking about even imaginary stuff, which we know go around and have the power to absolutely kill us, you know. whatever insulation they give you to allow you to deal with this crappy, crappy world, no matter how hard you try, I didn't get it. I mean, I was just coming down the assembly line up there in heaven, and, you know, and I was about to get the insulation, and somebody said, hey, God, and he looked up, and that was it. Screwed, you know. Missed me, went to the next one, and that's the deal, you know, and I didn't get that deal. So for me, life is tough. You know, life is about feeling sorry for myself. Life is about comparing my insides with your outsides, and, you know, I don't know, I've never met anybody who feels injustice the way I, you know, who looks like they feel injustice the way I feel injustice, and, you know. And, you know, it's just tough. Life is just tough for me. It's easy for you, it's tough for me. And what's the use of telling you? Because you wouldn't ever understand, because I'm unique and I'm different. And I got so many things working against me. I just got to try harder. I just got to try harder. I just need accoutrements, you know, to be okay. I'm okay, you know, listen. Of course, I'm going to tell you I'm the greatest thing in the world, but really, I'm okay as long as I have a car or as long as I have a gal. Or so I need the jewelry, you know, I need the stuff going on in my life to be okay, because, you know, I'm not okay by myself, because, you know, to me, I'm a piece of crap, which is probably why I'm always telling myself that sort of AA Muzak that we say in the shower and all over the place when all of a sudden it comes whizzing through our brain, I'm an asshole, I'm a jerk, I'm stupid, I don't deserve to live. That's probably why we think about suicide from time to time, or think about, you know, why do people think, you know, what people are thinking about us all the time. That's probably why we always worry about what other people think about us, and probably why we worry about, get anxious about that stuff. You know, it says, what does it say in the book? It says, one of the things the promises says that we're going to lose fear of other people. That's probably why we fear other people. I used to say, well, I'm a people person. I'm not scared about other people. And my sponsor say, well, then why did you have to get drunk whenever you were with them? Why did you always have to get drunk whenever you were with them? Why did you always feel uncomfortable whenever, why did you have to get drunk or drink in order to socialize with them? If it wasn't for the fact that you were scared of them because you felt like you were a piece of crap and they would know you were a piece of crap and you felt uncomfortable with them. You know, and whenever you use alcohol to do anything in your life, whatever it is, you lose the ability to do that thing without the alcohol. My whole life was about feeling crappy about life, and man, if you can't do life, and you know what it says, and what I've learned is all that stuff is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And when they're talking about us being restless, irritable, and discontented, they're talking, and you can add words to that like guilty or fearful or whatever you want to add to that. It's restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. We're restless, irritable, and discontented when we're sober. The restless, irritable, and discontented. So, you know, really, even though I suffered from a form of alcoholism before I came here, I never really suffered from full-fledged alcoholism. I never really realized it was alcoholism, because what I was really suffering from before I got here was something called drunk. Because I never stayed sober long enough to suffer from alcoholism. Because whenever alcoholism raised its ugly head, and of course I don't know what's alcoholism, to me it's just Russellism. It's just, to me, because my alcoholic life, it says the book, seems the only normal one. So, saying things like, you know, if only this happened, then I'll be okay. Why does this happen to me? I can't stand that. Something they don't know who they're screwing with. I can't believe this is happening. Whatever those thoughts are that come through my mind all the time, without any effort on my part, from the time I wake up in the morning until the time I go to sleep at night, where it's a constant array of thoughts coming at me, like, you know, like the Star Wars game was coming at me, you know? I mean, like one after the other, after the other, after the other, committee, whatever those thoughts are that are coming at me, no matter what's going on, which doesn't allow me to have peace or rest, whatever that deal is, that's not something weird or strange. That's just the way I am. That's just the way I think. That's the way I've been ever since I was 3 years old, for as long as I can remember. And I don't know. All I know is when you have thoughts like that, sometimes I just need a drink. I need a drink. You know what I mean? You ever need a drink? I need a drink. And I don't know, that's alcoholism. And, you know, and so I take the drink and so I get drunk. So I never really got to the point where I had to experience full-blown alcoholism, because whenever it could be 10 miles away. You know, you sort of feel it 10 miles away. It's sneaking up on you, that feeling, you know, and you don't even know what that feeling is. You have a drink and you chase it away, and then you don't suffer from alcoholism anymore. You suffer from a drunk. That's what they arrest you for. They don't arrest you for alcoholism. They don't pull you over and say, "Excuse me, sir, can you get out of your car? I've noticed that you're feeling self-centered today." "Excuse me, sir, can you pull over your car? I've noticed that you're thinking about all the stuff you don't have. Can you pull over your car? I noticed that you're lonely. You know, you're feeling isolated and separated. I pull over your car, I notice you're worried about, you know, you haven't gotten laid lately, so nobody loves you and it's never going to happen again. But can you pull over your car? I'm sorry, sir, because, you know, I've noticed that you wish you had more money, you know." They're not talking about all the stuff that really plagues you now with 10, 15, 20, 5 years sober, the stuff that's really bothering you, because nobody looks like they have a drinking problem here today. You know, you're looking pretty much like you have a lonely problem. You look like you're pretty much having maybe a, you know, I'm a piece of crap problem. You probably have something like, you know, you're worried about a money problem, or, you know, your life is when's your life going to get better problem, or, you know, you probably have a whole lot of stuff going on, which all has to do with alcoholism. You know, but you don't even get to that deal until you stop drinking, right? That's the deal you get to get to when you stop drinking. So that's what you want to know about, right? You want to know how to get rid of that stuff? Mm-hmm. Would you like to know about that? Okay, so that's what I'm going to talk about. Whether it's the eighth step or not, you know, the eighth step in the second hour of this talk, you know? So I go to meetings, this is true. Some of you guys go to the same meetings I go to. I go to meetings that some of you guys don't know about that last 2.5-3 hours. The meeting I went to last night was what? How many hours was that? 3.5 hours? Nobody gets up to leave. Once in a while, they get up and they go to the bathroom. It lasts until the last person speaks for as long as it lasts, and that's it. But those are people that want this thing. You know, they're not looking. They want it. You know what I mean? They want this deal. They're willing to go to any length. The time doesn't mean anything to them. They're not looking at their watches and everything like that. They want the real deal. They're not joining the not drinking club. You know, there's two doors in A. There's the not drinking club, you know, and you got thousands of people lining behind that, and you'll get that for a while, you know, until it goes away. And then there's the other door. It says, "Experience much of heaven being rocked in the fourth dimension of existence club." That's what these guys had. That, you know, during the first 4 years, you know, it says in the big book, it says, the great fact is this, nothing less. It says, we've experienced much of heaven. We've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. And I don't think they're talking about not drinking. They could have said, we stopped drinking. As a matter of fact, they said that. He says, we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's the I can't stop drinking. The rest of the book talks about the spiritual disease and talks about recovering from that so that you live. So you finally get the 12th step and you have the joy of living. You have the abundant life. You know, and I hate to say this to you, but you can try to stay sober based upon the wisdom of the rooms, but I'll tell you the truth. 90% of people in the rooms are not being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. They're not experiencing much of heaven, and they don't even want that. They have settled. They have settled, like they say in the big, like in 12 and 12, they have settled for less. They have settled for good instead of the best. And those are the people who are the boys, when they talk about the sixth step separating from the men from the boys, because the men are the one in the sixth step, as you know, we've already been through that, who are doing everything over and over again for the rest of their lives, and so they grow in the image and likeness of their Creator. You understand what I'm saying? So whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you. And there are people that there is something wrong with them, and they may even realize there's something wrong with them, but they're not willing to go to the next step to try to get rid of something wrong with them. They just soon live that way, because the truth of the matter is that they don't want to get any better. And that's the deal, and that's part and parcel of alcoholism. You know, I mean, you know, Carl Menninger wrote a book before the A book was written. It was called Man Against Himself, and he said alcoholics, in the chapter on alcoholism, he's one of the world-known psychiatrists, he said alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. And when you see an alcoholic, whether he's outside the room or inside the room, you can bet one of the components of alcoholism is self-destruction. Is doing things and thinking things in such a way so that even though the answer is here, they're running in the opposite direction. This is as old as mankind. You know? This is as old as mankind. When the answer is this way, they go running that way. So for the first 4 years, 100 people found this deal, and they found a deal where not only they stopped drinking, but they found a deal where they said, you know, let me tell you what they said. This is what they said. This is what they said this deal is really about in Here is a Solution, I guess, right up front. It says, the great fact is this, just this, and nothing less, which I think means it's nothing less than this. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. You know, has that happened to you? Has your attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and God's universe been totally revolutionized? Or are you still thinking, really, and doing, and chasing after the same things you were chasing after, and thinking of, and worrying about before you even came into AA? Because if you are, you're not experiencing the abundant life. The central fact of our lives today, the central factor, you know what that means? That means this was the central fact of their lives. You know, I think if something's the central fact of your life, it's the central fact of your life. Your whole life is about it. You know what Bill Wilson said? You know, and read the story on Bill Dodson, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. When Bill Dodson was saying, I was trying to figure out, I was watching these people. And I wasn't drinking, they weren't drinking, but they had some sort of release, some sort of something I thought a person ought to have, and I couldn't figure out. I was trying to find the answer. And then one day he was talking to my wife in the kitchen, and Bill Wilson said this. He said, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. And he says, I've got the answer. Bill Wilson was unbelievably grateful that he was sober, and he gave all credit to God. And all he was done was focusing on God and trying to carry God's word. And that was what the whole thing is about. That's what the focus of the whole book is about, to enable to have a relationship with God and then finally improve upon that relationship with God. It's not a psychological book at all. It has nothing to do with any of that stuff. It's about God, you know, which is why they say, I guess, see, the relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And probably why they say the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we never do by ourselves. And on the last page, you know what they say on the last page of this book? This book that you read, that you think these guys are so smart, it says we know but a little. He says we don't know nothing. He says, so see to it that your real reliance always has to be on him. He will even show you how to create the fellowship you crave. He's even going to show you how to get rid of all this guilt and this crap you're carrying around and this thing that blocks you off from having decent relationships with other people. So for about 4 years, Alcoholics Anonymous started in 1935. That's when it started, 1935. And in 1939, they wrote a big book. They wrote a book, they called it the Big Book, or Alcoholics Anonymous, and they float around the thing. And in that book, they said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Okay, you understand that? They said, if you do what we did, you'll get what we got. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And we know one thing. Even though I'm a big book devotee, I would never tell somebody not to read the big book. What they know is this. You see, this isn't a first step meeting. This is an eighth and ninth step meeting. We're along the way. I'm assuming I'm talking with people with years of sobriety that want to learn a little bit more, okay? So we're way past that thing. We're talking about people that want to stop drinking milk. You want to eat the meat. You want to go further, okay? And the one thing we know they didn't do is we know they didn't what? Read the big book. Right? You understand? 1930, man, if I have to explain this to you, this is going to be tough. For 4 years, they're doing something. They write a book in 1939 where they generally put down, sort of specifically in some points, generally what they did. And they write it in such a way so as not to offend anybody, you know what I mean? Because they wanted, they just sort of like, because they pass it through a committee. You understand what I'm saying? And one says, take this out, put that in. And they write this big book, you know, it's a nice book, you know. And then the first thing they say is, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And the one thing we know is their path was not the big book. But if you, once you get about 5 or 10 or 15 years, and you got about 15 years or something like that, and you're trying to stay sober doing the same things that you were doing when you had 5 years, not drinking and going to meetings, you know. How can anybody put down not drinking and going to meetings? I would never, you know, it's like mother and apple pie. Don't drink, go to meetings, 90 and 90, get a sponsor, work the steps, sponsor people, all that stuff. You do all that. You want something, you know, by the time you're 15 years, you'll be dying. You'll be dying. You won't be going anywhere. You know why? Because you've lost the 11th step. You've flushed it down the toilet. You're not. You've actually lost the second step because you're not even interested in having more. You know what I mean? You're just doing the same old thing over and over again, and you may not drink. You may not drink. You won't even recognize that you're not growing spiritually. You won't even, which is probably why I've seen people drink at 20 years, at 50. I sponsor them. I sponsor these guys with 25 years, you know, and they're thumb-sucking crybabies. I mean, you wouldn't know it because they know how to talk AA and do all that stuff, and, you know, they'd never freak out in a room or anything like that, but, you know, they're the ones that are going through the divorces at 25 years, and you know, going all sorts of stuff and all sorts of problems, you know, going on. And they're scared to talk at meetings. They're scared to do whatever it is or even tell the sponsor because they got a lot of time. And that's when the false pride comes in and all that sort of stuff. And that kind of deal. So, in any event, so here we go. So here's the story. Let me read you a couple things and then we're going to get out of here. I can sort of finish this thing off in 10 minutes. 15 minutes. Give me an extra 5, you know, we'll figure this thing out. Okay, this is, so in any event, for 4 years, they did something. So when I was about 10 or 12 or 13 years sober, I wanted more. So I read a book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Times. It's conference approved. There's actually nothing conference disapproved. But, you know, and Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers talks about what they did for the first 4 years. What they actually did, their actual path, you know. It won't kill you. It won't kill you. It'll scare you a little bit because it's different. Because it'll because you'll have to surrender more. You want more. In order to get more, you're going to have to be willing to do things that others won't do. You know, you're going to have to surrender more if you want more. You're going to have to stop. You know, if you've really done the third step and you've turned your will and your life over to Him, you're going to have to let Him have that. You're going to have to stop worrying what you want to do, and you're going to have to start following directions, doing what they're telling you to do, because what they're telling you to do is clear. Because when you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, what you'll see is that what they said in Dr. Bob's and the Good Old Timers is the books that they found absolutely essential. Essential. Not only essential. What does essential mean? Essential. So if something's essential, it's what? Essential. Now, what they said was, they said, these are the books that we found, you ready for this? Absolutely essential. Which is like 100 proof essential, you know what I mean? It's like that clear crap that we used to drink essential, okay? So, were Sermon on the Mount, that's Matthew 5, 6, and 7, 1 Corinthians 13, and the book of James. As a matter of fact, we're almost close to the James Club. I don't care what religion you are. I don't really care what you think about God. I'm just telling you the fact. Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you something. You're entitled to your opinion. You're just not entitled to your own facts. I'm just telling you a fact. You don't have to believe me. Grab the book. Dr. Bob the Good Old Timers. This is, it says, this is what we did, which is absolutely essential to get where we got to go. This is like a recipe. It's real simple. You want a chocolate cake? Here's the ingredients for the chocolate cake. You want a chocolate cake because you like the way the chocolate cake looks. Here's the ingredients. You like the way it tastes. Here's the ingredients. You know, you say, I want that chocolate cake. You want to substitute, you know, egg beaters for eggs, you know, or skim milk for cream. You know, you'll get a cake. It's just not going to be that chocolate cake. You know, you want to vary from the deal. It's going to be a different deal. That's all. So that's what they did. Those are the three books. So some people will get into that stuff and some people won't. And some people will actually get pissed off. Because the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off, you know? You know, that's what Jack Nicholson said, the truth, you can't handle the truth. But it doesn't matter because it's not my life and it's not your life, it's their life. So they're free to do whatever they want to do. They're free to live their life the way they want to do. So on page 266 it says, these last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, and not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chopping of the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, in courage, in self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God. I guess that must have been the central fact for him. The love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. And the men that I hung out with in AA, the people that I wanted, what they had, were all like that. They may have used different words, but they were all exactly like that. The old-timers that I met, and why I was attracted to them, I don't know. I know not everybody is. And I don't even take credit for that. I mean, I think it's a gift from God that you're attracted to certain people, and those were the ones I was attracted to. It wasn't the ones with the big cars. It didn't mean that they had to be poor. There were some of them that were, you know, quite well off. But the men that I was attracted to were the men that were focused on the central fact, that were focused on God, unashamedly. And usually they had long-term sobriety. There was just something about them. I didn't understand it. You know, they weren't whiners. They weren't criers. They didn't talk badly about other people behind their back. You never caught them saying bad things about other people. They really didn't even have anything really bad to say about stuff. You know what I mean? They always had the same mood, and it was like a good mood. And it didn't. You thought that maybe they had millions in the bank, or they were always healthy, and some of them were dying of cancer. And no matter what was going on in their lives, the circumstances of their lives, they were in the same type of mood. And it was always about helping other people. It was just like they say in the big book. Just like they say in the big book. Just like these things, where they say, if we sincerely took this type of position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. And it talks about how we lose worrying about ourselves and we start thinking about other people, how we lose fear. That all of a sudden fear drifts away and we're reborn. And all these people were the same way, and those were the guys I hung out with. Those are the guys I wanted to be like. Those are the people that I looked at. Those were my we. You know, that was the we that I was looking at, and I followed them around, you know, and I sponsored a lot of people, you know, and I'm not just saying that to, you know, because they sponsored a lot of people. I did what they did, you know, and I hung around them. And, you know, you can read the books all you want, but I mean, to sit around with these people drinking coffee to 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning over a period of years, you start learning a lot of stuff. Not only about the big book, you learn about life. You learn about how they think. You learn about how they react to things, how they react to people, how they deal with people. I mean, it's not a thing you get like this. It's not a thing like you read all. And you know something about the big book? What I've discovered about the big book? Is it's a very interesting book. I say I'll read things from the big book. People will come up to me and say, "Man, that was this happened to me thousands of times. Man, that was great when you said this." I said, "You know what? You mean when I read that thing from the big book?" You know? He says, "No, yeah, when you said that thing." I said, "Well, that's right in the big book. I just read it." He says, "Yeah, but it's the way you read it." And I know what that means, because one of the things I understand about alcoholism is we alcoholics are willfully blind. Whenever an alcoholic sees, hears, or is told something he doesn't like or doesn't fit with his theology, it confuses him, and he pisses on it, and he throws it away, and he gets angry. So when somebody tells you they read the Big Book, it means they read the Big Book and they've decided what it means is that acceptance is the answer to all my problems, and that's not true. I mean, it's a nice statement. I spent a long time on acceptance. It's something you got to deal with, but sometimes courage is. Faith always is. And if acceptance is the answer to all your problems, and if that's what this thing is all about, then they don't need a Big Book. A matchbook cover will do. And the bottom line is the only way you get acceptance is through faith. And the only way you get faith and all that stuff and you mature in faith is through a relationship with God. And the only way you get gratitude is because to have a relationship with God, because how can you be grateful to yourself? You've got to be grateful to something else. And so what happens is that it's a long process, it's a big book, and you can read this thing, trust me, when you have 1 year, when you have 2 years, when you have 7 years, and at 15 years sober, going through a divorce, going through cancer, pulling your hair out after sponsoring people, you can walk into a room, be ready to surrender, and hear somebody talk from the podium, and hear something from the big book for the first time and say, I've never heard that before. Do you know how many people with 15, 20 years come up to me and say, I never heard that? And I'm not talking about bad AAs. I'm talking about people that sponsor people that, you know, are into this thing. You know why they never heard it? They never used it because they never wanted to use it. Because they never had it put to them. Because they avoided it. You know? That's the deal. And this thing is a serious disease. So, I think I am going to read one thing from... I've got a choice. I can read this one or that one. I'm going to read one. I'll at least save that one for later. Since I mentioned Matthew, Sermon on the Mount. By the way, does anybody know what the first... Well, I know you know because I probably told you this before. You know the first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous. The first AA meeting they ever had was Dr. Bob reading Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5, 6, and 7. You didn't know that, did you? Try to do that in an AA group today. They'll tell you, you know what they'll tell you? It's not conference-approved material. You know why they'll tell you that? You know why? Because they're ignorant. Those are the people you're following. Whenever you see somebody stand up in a meeting and put down God and put down religion, they're ignorant, and that's alcoholism. Alcoholism is about resentments. They still have a chip on their shoulder. You know what AA says? You know what the Big Book says? It says we lose prejudice even against organized religion. We begin to see where religious people are right. That's what the book says. That's what this fellowship is all about. I don't know what organization you're in. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what it's about. Guys that are pissed off because of God, pissed off because of religion, putting that stuff down, they're not in AA. They're not even sober. So you can either follow the book and you can follow this thing, or you can follow the wisdom of the rooms, which is a compilation of people, half of which are going to end up killing themselves or drinking because they don't want to do this anyway. You have your choice as to what you want to do. You understand? If that ain't preaching, it's called exhorting. Okay. Here we go. So I'm going to read this one part. So after he does Sermon on the Mount, which is absolutely essential in order to get this thing, this is what is said. I like this part. This is what is said after the whole thing is done. The last thing that is said is this. Therefore, you know, he does this whole long sermon. And then he says this. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine, how many of you guys have ever sponsored somebody? You know, when you sponsor sometimes you try to help them and you tell them something and they piss all over it, right? Or they nod, they say, how about this? They nod there and they say, you're right, you're right. And they never do it, right? You know, they hear the words, they hear it, they're nodding their heads, and then they never do it. They never follow up, right? And then you get, every once in a while you get a guy you sponsor and you tell him to do something and it like blows your mind. You know, one out of a hundred. You get somebody you sponsor and you tell them to do something and the next day they do it. And then you tell them to do something and the next day they do it. And we call that, you know what they call that? We call that sober people. They're sober. They want it. They just do it. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundations on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. You know, same rain, same wind, same circumstances of life. You're not protected. You know, you still have the foreclosures. You still have the cancer. You know, you still have the same stuff going on. Same exact thing. You're not protected by any of it. The kids go out and they do their things. You're not protected from life. In one person's life, everything crashes around them. They go out to drink. Their life is destroyed. One person's life, the structure stands because it's built on a rock. You got to decide whether you want to build your house on a rock or whether you want to build your house on sand. And here you're given that option either way. The problem is if you want to build it on a rock, you're going to have to change your way of thinking. You're going to have to get rid of those old ideas, those old prejudices, those old he can't tell me what to do and animosities. You're going to have to get rid of that. You're going to have to give up that thing, and you're going to have to get a little humble. You're going to have to eat a little humble pie, which is difficult to do with an alcoholic personality because you didn't even get in here until your life was smashed beyond recognition to the point where you were at least willing to say, well, maybe I have a drinking problem. Imagine why it's so difficult to even go farther if you have that alcoholic personality. When you stop drinking and it's never that bad anymore. It's almost really impossible when you think about it. What can get you to move over to that side of the room, the other side of the room, when your life isn't, so all you do is you just suffer. You're sober, you're not drinking, you pick up those medallions, you think you're doing okay, and then you get in your car and start to thinking again. And then it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're lonely again. You're 3 o'clock in the morning, you're doing that 3 o'clock in the morning thing. You can't get to sleep and you're alone in your bed. You may have a wife there, you may have a husband there, but you're still alone in your bed. You're alone with your thoughts. And you say, when is this ever going to pass? I feel so alone. And you don't know why. And it's standing there right for you where you never have to feel that way again. You know, but you can't do it. You can't. That's the real disease of alcoholism. Thank you very much. Thank you.